Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, January 23, 2018. Members of Parliament from Northern Bahr al-Ghazal condemn violence in South Sudan.
We are concerned about the problem being created by General Paul Malong. And we have come out as MPs from former Northern Bahr al-Ghazal state to express our position that we are not for war. We want peace.
And South Sudan ranks among the least democratic countries in the world.
The ratings of South Sudan in a number of things have actually worsened right from the emergence of the violence. The first thing that South Sudan as a country need to do is to work towards establishing a peaceful and stable country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some lawmakers from the northern Bahr al-Ghazal area in South Sudan's National Assembly say they condemn an attempt by the former SPLA chief, General Paul Malong, to rebel against the government of President Kiir. The lawmakers are calling on South Sudanese to support a peaceful resolution to the conflict in the country. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
The MPs say their position is based on the recent official declaration of General Malong as a rebel by the Office of the President and voice recordings in which General Malong is allegedly instructing supporters to attack government positions. Arthur Akwen Chol is Deputy Speaker of South Sudan's Council of States, the upper chamber of the National Assembly. He's also a member of the Assembly's Northern Bahr al-Ghazal Parliamentary Caucus.
We are concerned about the problem being created by General Paul Malong. And we have come out as MPs from former Northern Bahr al-Ghazal state to express our position in front of the public that we are not for war. We want peace. We don't want a rebellion to happen in this country again.
More than a dozen members of parliament from former Northern Bahr al-Ghazal state signed a position paper which was read aloud to reporters in Juba today. General Malong hails from Awil in former Northern Bahr al-Ghazal state. Ngong Deng Gum, chairman of the Northern Bahr al-Ghazal Parliamentary Caucus, says his group decided to write the paper after meeting last Friday to discuss General Paul Malong's attempted rebellion.
And imagine social media information of the rebellion of the former army chief of General Staff, General Paul Malong, and the official declaration of his rebellion by the press secretary of the Office of the President, plus the flying interception voice records, which he denied in the social media.
In a response circulated widely on social media about 2 weeks ago, Malong strongly denied he has mounted a rebellion against the government and dismissed audio recordings in which he allegedly instructed army officers to rebel against the Kiir administration. Gum says all MPs at the meeting agreed on some clear resolutions.
One, to strongly condemn in the strongest term possible of taking power through illegal means or any rebellion in South Sudan to undermine the democratic elected government. Two, to support the position of the government, notably the peaceful resolution of the conflicts. Three, to communicate to the people of South Sudan in general and people of the former Northern Bahr al-Ghazal in particular to remain calm and be in touch with their representatives at national level.
Gum says the resolutions were agreed by all 35 members of parliament representing the constituencies of former Northern Bahr al-Ghazal state. He says the lawmakers plan to meet with President Salva Kiir within the next few days and launch a campaign to defuse tensions between the government and Malong.
To hold the rallies in Juba and in the constituencies of the Northern Bahr al-Ghazal state to sensitize the communities about the ongoing political tension in the country, and particularly in the emerging rebellion of Paul Malong Awan.
Gum says many people have gone into hiding because they fear government reprisals for their associations with the former army chief of staff. He urged those residents to return home and guaranteed their safety. Malong was sacked from his position in May 2016 and a short time later placed under house arrest before being allowed to leave the country in November to seek medical attention in Kenya. South Sudan in Focus has not been able to contact Malong since he departed South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
South Sudan is ranked among the least democratic countries in the world. The research organization Freedom House cites the collapse of the 2015 peace agreement, the resumption of conflict in 2016, and serious human rights abuses against civilians as some of the reasons for South Sudan's poor ranking in 2017 Democracy Index. A senior official in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs admits the country is doing poorly. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
On a scale of 1 to 7, where 1 is the most free and 7, the least, South Sudan scored 7 for all three items. The Freedom House says in South Sudan there is no freedom of expression, nor is there political or social freedoms. The report points out that in South Sudan, the president cannot be impeached. He also has the authority to fire state governors and dissolve the parliament and state assemblies as he sees fit. The report says despite all of the new legislative and executive posts that were assigned under the 2015 peace deal, the effort failed to resolve the underlying dispute which caused the civil war. Although most political competition takes place within the SPLM ruling party, President Salva Kiir, who chairs the party, is intolerant of internal dissent, according to the report. Ambassador Maiwen Makola, spokesperson of the South Sudan Ministry of Foreign Affairs, does not deny the points made in the report. He insists South Sudan is a democratic country.
But we are saying that we are doing the best we could do as a government to try to minimize those problems that are happening, the violations that are being alleged on us, and the other things that are done by our military, there is accountability and there is a process of trying to minimize them as we seek for peace.
The report says the South Sudanese army exercises an overbearing influence over political affairs and public life, and that activities of armed groups and civilians tied to other political and ethnic factions are shut out of politics. The report further notes that both South Sudan's executive and legislative branches lack electoral legitimacy and are unable to exercise control over the national territory. It says corruption is pervasive among the political elite and no one has been held accountable for squandering the country's considerable oil wealth. Jame David Kolok, who heads the civil rights group Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, agrees with the report.
One of our biggest challenges as a country has been the issue of our institutions. For democracy to thrive, we need to have very strong institutions. And of course, apart from the executive, that in most cases are supposed to foresee some few things, institutions like the judiciary and the parliament must be extremely very strong.
The report also says the country's legal system is broken and runs on a culture of impunity. Susan Savit William, executive director of National Alliance for Women Lawyers, agrees. She says since South Sudan declared its independence, the government has not set up a judicial service commission which is supposed to oversee the work of the judiciary as required by law.
I think the rule of law have to be established because every country or every institution have to be, you know, to be the foundation stone must be based on the rule of laws. So South Sudan, to at least push to a certain level, rule of law will guide our militaries, will guide our civil servant, will guide the citizen, will guide our characters, our behaviors. So our moral behavior will be guided by the rule of law.
David says one important thing has to happen in order to improve the country's ranking in the International Democracy Index.
The ratings of South Sudan in number of things have actually worsened right from the emergence of the violence. So that tells us that the first thing that South Sudan as a country need to do is to work towards establishing a peaceful and a stable country. All that has been mentioned in the report are all product of violence.
South Sudan's ranking for freedoms, political rights, and civil liberties was 6 in 2016 and climbed to the highest level of 7 in 2017 in the report. Freedom House 2017 report covers developments in 195 countries across the globe. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The African Union is holding its 30th annual summit this week in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. This year's theme is Winning the Fight Against Corruption. Augustine Ting is the director of research at the Juba-based SAD Institute. He says the current African Union model for ending South Sudan conflict is not working. Ting tells Ayen Bior that if the African Union wants to create a sustainable future in South Sudan, it should focus on ending impunity and holding perpetrators accountable.
You have to look at the situation that they're dealing with. If we look at the Ivory Court, some would argue that the AU has a role to play in terms of it not being established. But then you see the country still raging in war, and you find that it's quite difficult to hold individuals that are currently engaged in such activities accountable. So it's tricky. But again, the AU should come up with frameworks that are at least seen as being useful down the road when this accountability measures are installed. And people are held accountable. That is not being seen right now. The AU should be coming to South Sudan to negotiate with the leaders and advance this case to the UN if there's need.
Winning the fight against corruption is the theme for the summit this year. The AU wants to talk about creating a sustainable path to Africa's transformation. South Sudan is no stranger to corruption based on some reporting, but I want to touch on the economic impact that corruption has on the country. You live in Juba. Tell us how the economy is impacting the people.
Well, first of all, the economy is on its knees right now, and that is due to the factors, corruption being one of them. The purchasing power of regular citizens has totally plummeted in the last few months. Most people are not able to afford food right now in the country. It's disastrous, if I would use a single word. And corruption definitely has played a huge role in the last 5-7 years. Especially given the fact that the officials have used the public resources for their own benefit. But what can be accounted for as far as this downturn of the economy, for the most part, is the war.
And what other recommendations do you have for the AU ahead of its annual summit?
Well, two things I have for the AU. The first is that the current model of peace in South Sudan isn't working. And this model is a model that uses duress as opposed to having the parties agree on what it is that they can implement. This has to change. The parties are the ones to implement the agreement, not the AU, not the IGAD, not the TRICA, not any other supporter of peace in South Sudan. And that needs to be realized. The second thing is that there have got to be some implementable metrics in terms of accountability. You have JMAC working on behalf of IGAD, monitoring the peace activities in the country, and that's the furthest it goes. It provides information on violations, but what happens next is totally nothing.
That was Augustine Ting, the director of research at the SAD Institute and assistant professor at the University of Juba. He was speaking to Ayen Bior from Rochester, Minnesota. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese refugees showcase their talents. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What tricks do you use to memorize something?
I read a lot. So one thing I do is understand. If I understand something, it means I'll memorize it.
Mostly writing down in my notebook or sitting down and take much of my time thinking a lot about that thing is when I can try to remember.
Constant repetition. I repeat nothing as many as possible, in 10, 20 times, so I have to stick. And if there's any graphic or pictures around the thing, it also helps me to memorize it.
I usually memorize using acronyms, you know. For example, if I want to remember something, I just take the first alphabets of the thing and then acronym.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's Tuesday and welcome to our weekly health segment. Today we are talking about a new cancer machine in Uganda. Uganda's cancer patients can finally breathe a sigh of relief after the country got a new Cobalt-60 radiation treatment machine. But health officials say this may not be enough because of an ever-increasing number of cancer cases in the country. Halima Athumani reports for VOA from Kampala.
More cancer patients will now be able to receive radiation cancer treatment thanks to the installation of a new teletherapy machine. The old machine broke down in March 2016, leaving Uganda without that type of cancer therapy. Uganda and the International Atomic Energy Agency each contributed half of the over $812,000 cost of the machine. Dr. Rem Jackson, the director of the Uganda Cancer Institute, notes that every year for the last few years, there has been an increase in the number of new cancer cases. The Cancer Institute has registered more than 7,000 new cases, and the revisits are between 34,000 to 37,000 cases.
So that means we still have very high mortality, and this is contributed to mainly because our patients come late when their disease is advanced.
With a population of 40 million, Uganda would need 40 machines to meet the international standard of treatment for its people. Dr. Ruth Acheng, Uganda's Minister for Health, notes that there is still a lot that needs to be done to meet the treatment demand.
Currently, we are capable of treating about 80 patients per day. However, one machine is not adequate. Hence, the need to fast-track the next phase of our response to the crisis, and that is the modernization and expansion of radiotherapy services.
The restoration of radiotherapy services and installation of the new Cobalt 60 radiation treatment machine came only after Uganda got clearance from the International Atomic Energy Agency. Yukiya Amano, the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, says in 2009 when he took office, the cancer situation in Africa was worrying, with 28 countries lacking cancer machines.
The IAEA has expertise in cancer equipment and training and safety. We are working with the WHO in close cooperation to provide better service to countries.
The Cobalt 60 machine is expected to treat its first cancer patient by April. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Hundreds of refugees who returned to Yei Town from refugee camps in northern Uganda say they have nothing to eat. Representatives of the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Yei River State says the state government has no funds to buy food for the returnees. A UNHCR official says a team from her office is on the ground to assess the needs of the returnees. Daniel Friday Martin has more for VOA from Yei.
Eight officials hold a roll call to verify the names of registered returnees at a returnees reception center inside the Jigomoni Primary School in Yei Town, as more than 800 voluntary returnees listen attentively. Some returnees sit under the shade of huge mango trees to escape the hot sun in the school compound, while others are sheltered in two open classrooms. The returnees, most of whom are women and children, look exhausted from their journey home. They say they arrived in Ye Town via Ye Kaya Road and a government-organized convoy this week. Tom Georgia says he returned from the Bidibidi refugee camp in Uganda's Yumbe district 2 days ago. Georgia says he left the camp because he could no longer bear the harsh living conditions at the camp.
Lunch, you take beans. In the evening, you take beans. And even you can see the health of the people is not all that fine. I think even school is not favoring my life. There is nothing better than home. What I'm getting mostly is still I'm getting hurt in terms of feeding program. And when I reached home, I can see all the houses got burned.
Returnee Asunta Michael says even though aid workers have distributed blankets, cooking utensils and other non-food items, she has no food to feed her two children. Speaking in Arabic, Asunta says many of her friends back in the camps of Uganda want to return home, but will only do so when they assure peace has been restored in the country.
We came under a convoy. We heard that there is peace in Ye. We are given some soaps, buckets, and water guards. There is no food given. We are calling on our leaders, including President Salva, to bring peace so that some of our brothers and sisters remaining in the camp can return home and settle peacefully.
34-year-old returnee Lemi Isaac says for the last few days he survived on food provided by neighbors and friends in Ye Town.
We dropped here on 7th of January 2018. Since that date up to date, we have not received any relief or any support from any other organizations. It is today that we are seeing the buckets and some soaps that are to be given out actually to us. If you see the people who have come with kids, the women, they need food. Because actually right now getting food is very difficult from the market.
Peter Bootley, who works with the government's Relief and Rehabilitation Commission office in Ye, says the state cannot afford to buy food for the returnees and is appealing to aid agencies to provide food aid.
Sunday, we received 28 households and 58 individuals. Just 2 days ago, we equally received 27 households and 65 individuals. Our capacity to receive these people is too small. We are unable to meet all their demands because their immediate need now is food.
Sirisco Watanasap with the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says her agency and other aid groups are assessing the needs of the returnees on the ground. She says they are finding that many children are malnourished and need immediate life-saving assistance.
We came with our partner UMCO here to really do the protection monitoring, basically to get more information on their basics, demography on their family and what are their concerns, what are their safety, and also we'll be able to go back to discuss among agencies, at least in a protection cluster and any other cluster that we have, to see what we can support them.
The returnees say they voluntarily returned home after the cessation of hostilities agreement was signed in Addis Ababa last month by all stakeholders. Aside from stating that all parties shall cease all hostile military actions and all forces shall immediately freeze in their locations except for logistical purposes, the agreement's Part 3, Section 1 states that all parties shall uphold international law and shall allow and facilitate unfettered access for people in need to receive assistance from the United Nations and impartial international and national non-governmental organizations. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Ye River State.
Some South Sudanese refugees who participated in a 10-kilometer marathon in Adjumani say the event helped to create better understanding among refugees and the host communities. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from Adjumani in northern Uganda.
Staff with the NGO I Am Peace, which works to foster better relations between refugees and Ugandans, are awarded certificates and cash prizes to winners of the marathon Saturday night in Adjumani district. Nearly a third of the participants were South Sudanese refugees. The marathon's winner was 24-year-old South Sudanese refugee Wani John. He says such events help create harmony among the different communities in the district.
It creates a friendship between the host and the refugees, but mostly just to unite, actually, yeah, and create peace.
The first and second winners in the male and female categories all received cash prizes of 500,000 Ugandan shillings or $150 and 250,000 Ugandan shillings or $75. Organizers say they plan to donate all proceeds to the Adjumani Hospital's palliative care unit, which includes 7 South Sudanese refugees as patients. Rana Dragamute Scovia, who came in second for females, says she's glad she took part because patients at the Adjumani Hospital need all the support they can get.
The palliative care, this poor, they can't help themselves. They need medicine, they need advice, they need outreach, they need a lot of things.
John, who is studying for a degree in logistics and procurement at Uganda's Nkumba University, says he was overjoyed to win the race, saying he did not just win for himself.
I was so excited, very proud also. We were few, actually. Most of them were the Ugandans, yeah. But I'm so proud that I came number one.
Sambro Lupai, team leader for the youth-led Iron Peace Group, says John's victory will inspire other South Sudanese refugees to take sports more seriously.
That has given a very big impact to other talented South Sudanese in the field of sports, that they can still come out from their various settlements and even join the clubs here in Adjumani district and participate in a lot of sporting activities.
The Iron Peace Group organized the marathon in collaboration with the Uganda Athletics Federation, the Ugandan Police, the Ugandan People's Defense Forces, and the District Health Office under the patronage of Uganda's former world athletics champion, Dorcas Inzikuru. Inzikuru, a track and field athlete who won the 2005 inaugural world title in women's 3,000-meter steeplechase in Helsinki, as well as the first Commonwealth title in the event in 2006 in Melbourne, also attended the event. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Adjumani.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Tanai with the South African star Hugh Masekela, who died today after a long illness. We have been listening to Hugh Masekela with the song Tanai. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you inviting us into your homes and vehicles. We want to hear what you think about this show, as well as what you don't like. You can contact us on the web at southsudanvoanews.com. Check us out on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. We hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Let's go.